E-Words, Volume 2, by Chan Master Sheng Yan. Enlightenment and Buddhahood. From Chan Newsletter, number 113, February, 1996. Chan Meditation Center, October 30th, 1994. The Chinese term Kai Wu, translated as enlightenment, consists of two characters, so the meaning may seem to have two parts, but they constitute one term. In English, we either use the word enlightenment or awakening. An unenlightened person is in a state of sleep, a dream state, continually dreaming through births and deaths. The enlightened, on the other hand, have awakened from this dream. In this sense, Buddhahood and awakening are one and the same. This morning, in a short talk during the meditation session, I introduced the idea of using but not attaching. Some related ideas: utilize but do not possess, share but do not monopolize. Are they related to enlightenment? Attachment is vexation. Possessive mentality is vexation. Attempting to monopolize is vexation. But with wisdom, we may make use of anything, and that need not be vexation. Things we do not share: a wife, a husband, savings, and so on. This is not to say that the enlightened share their wives or husbands, but they have no self-interest, and they make available whatever is necessary to help others. This is the attitude of a bodhisattva. Is the enlightenment we have just spoken of the same as sudden enlightenment? We often speak of sudden and gradual enlightenment. Results are the same, but the methods to achieve those results may be what we call sudden, or they may be gradual. The Parinirvana Sutra states that anyone directly on the Mahayana path is considered to be on the path of sudden enlightenment, whereas anyone proceeding along the Hinayana path is considered to be on the gradual path, moving sequentially from one stage to another. Within the Hinayana are two paths. The first is that of the Saravaka, literally sound hearer, meaning a disciple of the Buddha who achieved arhatship through hearing the Buddha's words. The second is the Pratyeka Buddha, someone who reached enlightenment by observing and understanding the law of conditioned arising. I addressed all of you as bodhisattvas. By that, I meant that we are all followers of the sudden path. This does not mean that you are enlightened already. Underestimate yourselves. Enlightenment may be at hand. The essentials of entering into the path of sudden enlightenment. A book by a famous Chan master says, "What is meant by sudden enlightenment? In an instant of time, all illusory thinking is eliminated. Nothing is attained when one awakens. Yet, in realizing sudden enlightenment, one can attain liberation within this lifetime. Eliminate illusory thinking, and your vexations and attachments disappear, leaving only liberation." Enlightened awakening is an important concept. At this stage, there is nothing to be attained. So, if you understand nothing I say, that may be the best thing, because when you go home and are asked, "What did you learn from that Dharma talk?" you can say, "Nothing to be gained, nothing to be gotten." You should then be congratulated for your deep attainment. Mean that the best thing you can do is to plug up your ears so that you don't hear anything I say, because that will prevent you from getting enlightened. That is definitely not the idea. We must know everything, yet not attached to what we know. We must possess everything, yet lay no claim to it. This is enlightenment. This is awakening. This does not mean that one is deaf or an idiot. Achieve sudden enlightenment. To abruptly eliminate illusory thinking is quite difficult. For this reason, you need to practice. You need to strive for a moment in time when suddenly your wandering thoughts and illusory thinking disappear. At that point, you might say, "Now I have no illusory thinking." But that thought might immediately bring back your illusory thinking. Or you might utter those words while in a state of illusory thinking. But completely ridding yourself of illusory thinking, and thereby achieving sudden enlightenment, is not so easy. If you are aware of your illusory thoughts, this suggests you are not too far from this kind of enlightenment. Know something about enlightenment. But if you are in a state of illusory thinking and are yet unaware of it, that is problematic. We mentioned two interpretations of sudden path. First is to directly enter the Mahayana path, and second, to completely drop illusory thinking and instantaneously become enlightened. A third understanding is from the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment, which says that those who have good karmic roots can follow the Bodhisattva path and go directly to the Mahayana path of enlightenment without going through the gradual process of the Hinayana path. The first two interpretations will do, but the third one, which incorporates them both, is better. As I said earlier, sudden enlightenment does not necessarily mean getting enlightened right away, but anyone on the Mahayana path already has the karma of sudden enlightenment. Enlightenment in this teaching can be of different levels. It can be the great enlightenment of a Buddha, also be a somewhat shallow experience, like someone opening their eyes for a second before returning to sleep. Have you ever dozed off, only to be nudged on the shoulder by someone? You open your eyes and glance at them once, before you fall back to sleep. This is analogous to a small enlightenment. Enlightenment, once awakened, you never go back to sleep. There are no longer vexations or obstructions in the mind, no sense of gain or loss. In Japan, I met someone reputed to be an enlightened master. He is married and lives at home with his wife. I said to him, "As an enlightened person, you should have no attachments." He responded, "I have no attachment to my wife, but she has attachment to me." So, do you think that this is an appropriate attitude? Is this like saying, "I don't care for money, but it just comes to me"? Is this enlightenment? What is really the nature of the relationship with his wife? He may simply conduct himself in the role of marriage. This is the idea of using or behaving in a particular way, but not attaching. If there were physical desire in their relationship, that would not be liberation. Even Shakyamuni had to eat, but that does not mean he wasn't enlightened. Shakyamuni left his family life behind, but the lack of sex and companionship will not kill you. Eating is a basic need. The other is desire. We should not confuse the two. If the master goes home to his wife out of respectful obligation, but without desire, is this enlightenment? Shengyan. If there is no desire, then it is not a contradiction. Even Shakyamuni himself, after his Buddhahood, still took care of his wife and his son. Question. How do you abstain from desire, yet still keep the desire for liberation? Shengyan. We can divide desire into that which is pure and that which is not pure. Pure desire is really a kind of aspiration. Aspiration may be the closest word, though sometimes we use the word wish. In Chinese, the word is actually the same as vow. Thus, in the case of enlightenment, we are not talking about impure desire. We refer to a vow or aspiration to go beyond the world. I would like to explain what is meant by enlightenment. Enlightenment can be very broad or deep, or not very deep. It can be what is considered complete enlightenment. Instances, hearing even a single phrase of Buddha Dharma may cause a change in thinking, and may also be considered a kind of enlightenment. Thus, enlightenment does not have to mean the complete elimination of vexations. For enlightenment can come in a complete or deep manifestation, but it may also come in a partial manifestation. A quote from a few sutras. The first quote is from the first chapter of the Saddharma Pundarika Sutra, also known as the Lotus Sutra, which states that the Buddha explains the right Dharma through a variety of causes and conditions. Here, causes and conditions primarily refers to various kinds of actions that bodhisattvas cultivate in their casual ground, and the kind of attainment or accomplishment they reach, and also through countless fables and analogies that clearly illuminate the Buddha Dharma in order to enlighten all sentient beings. Quoting the sutra, here enlightenment basically means to ensure that people understand. In this sense, today, I am giving a Dharma talk, and the understanding we share is a kind of enlightenment. So we should all be overjoyed that, in this sense, we are enlightened. But perhaps in this context, we should not use the word enlightened. It sounds more plausible to say, Now I understand the Dharma, rather than saying, I am enlightened. Because there is a general idea that before one is enlightened, one is an ordinary sentient being, and that after one is enlightened, one is something very special, no longer ordinary. Throwing around the word enlightenment may scare off some people.
People often ask me if I am enlightened, and I always answer, what do you think? Most of the people who study with me hope I am enlightened, because if I am not, they may feel, what's the use of studying with him? There also may be people who would prefer that I am not enlightened. They may think that an enlightened person is really different, may eat different kinds of food, may talk in a different manner, and may use obscure language. So some people may prefer that I am not enlightened, so that I can still interact and speak in a manner that they can relate to. When I was a young monk, I knew that some of the elderly monks had achieved excellent cultivation, and when I overheard their conversations, I did not understand at all what they said. I asked, what were you just saying? Typically the response would be, what do you know, little kid? At that time, I thought that enlightened people talked in an incomprehensible way. So, by this standard, if you understand what I'm saying, I'm probably not enlightened. And if my words leave you in the dark, that means I am enlightened. Do you agree with this idea? Someone asked, what is the mental state of a Chan master? A master who is truly enlightened is always aware of where he is during the day, during the night, even while sleeping. But a master who has not reached this level might lapse into dreamlike or illusory states. Here is another quote from the Avatamsaka Sutra. To enlighten all sentient beings in darkness or in ignorance. How does one enlighten sentient beings? By expounding the Dharma. Whether or not the expounder is enlightened, whether or not the listener will become enlightened, simply expounding the Dharma is enlightening sentient beings. The ancient master, Ashvaghosha Bodhisattva, expounded the Dharma through music. Using music, he explained the dharmas of emptiness, no self, and suffering, also known as the three Dharma seals. Upon hearing this Dharma, as many as 500 princes in the city simultaneously left home to cultivate the path. It does not mean that 500 princes upon hearing this music became enlightened, but that they were able to cut off the attachments to the five senses. So, to the extent that you have some understanding of Buddha Dharma, though you may not leave home like the princes, this is a kind of enlightenment. Now, I want to discuss this idea of enlightenment in greater detail. Here, according to the Lotus Sutra, enlightenment should really consist of four words together. The first word can be translated as open. The second we translate as show. The third, awaken. And the fourth, realization. This realization is meant not in the sense of intellectual understanding, but deep, experiential realization. Until now, we have not said what one is enlightened or awakened to. In the Lotus Sutra, open refers to uncovering the wisdom of the Buddha, or what the Buddha sees, or what the Buddha sees and knows. Showing is the Buddha expounding to sentient beings what he sees and knows. Awaken also means enlighten, but this is more of an intellectual understanding. Realization connotes experiencing. It is the true personal experience a sentient being has of what the Buddha sees and knows. In the Lotus Sutra, what the Buddha sees and knows can be further understood as the Buddha's wisdom, or as all-encompassing wisdom. All-encompassing wisdom is of three kinds. The first is the wisdom of liberation. This is the wisdom by which one sees that emptiness is the true characteristic of all phenomena. It is the wisdom obtained when one is enlightened. Second is the wisdom of all paths, which all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have. It is the wisdom of helping sentient beings of different backgrounds and dispositions on the various paths to Buddhahood. This wisdom manifests only after the wisdom of liberation has manifested. Third is the all-encompassing wisdom of everything, which only a Buddha can fully manifest. Bodhisattvas who have obtained liberation and who are sages understand the all-encompassing wisdom of everything, but they cannot fully manifest it until they attain Buddhahood. Of the four terms discussed, opening, showing, enlightening, and realizing, the fourth term literally translates as entering, but it means entering into realization. I explained the term awaken as intellectual understanding, but that is only a partial meaning. Another meaning of awaken is a partial or sequential entering into realization. For simplicity, we can say that awaken can also be understood as a partial and sequential realization. If this seems difficult, just remember these four terms: open, show, awaken, and realizing. They are, of course, verbs, action words. But what object do they take? The object is what the Buddha sees and knows, that is to say, the all-encompassing wisdom of everything. A further explanation of the wisdom of the Buddha, the third wisdom, which for lack of a better term we translate as the all-encompassing wisdom of everything, includes the wisdom of liberation, in which equality or non-differentiation is emphasized. The second wisdom, the wisdom of all paths, emphasizes the difference among sentient beings. We recall that with the first wisdom, the emphasis is on equality based on the emptiness. In the wisdom of all paths, the emphasis is on the differences between sentient beings. Sentient beings differ, therefore they need different paths, and they go by different paths. And then finally, the all-encompassing wisdom of everything incorporates and transcends the first two kinds of wisdom. No matter what stage of enlightenment we are in, we have not reached Buddhahood yet. So what do we mean by becoming a Buddha? There can be two interpretations. First is that Buddhahood is attained by accumulated action. For example, in the Agamas, and also in some early Dharma discourses, it is said that a practitioner has to go through an enormously long period of time, basically three countless great kalpas, in order to attain Buddhahood. The second interpretation is that one can attain Buddhahood instantaneously. This may be further divided into two classes. The first includes people who become full, complete Buddhas. In Buddhist history, only Shakyamuni has done this. And the other class are people who attain the partial merit and virtue of the Buddha. Just traveling the path to Buddhahood and attaining the merit and virtue of the Buddha is considered attaining Buddhahood. There is a Chinese saying, when the butcher lays down his cleaver, he attains Buddhahood right away. That indeed is true. When you put down the butcher's knife and your mentality is changed, at that moment, you have attained at least partial Buddhahood. To the extent that you who hear this Dharma talk achieve a new understanding, this is a kind of attainment of Buddhahood. When people cultivate any method, such as going to temple and making offerings, this is part of cultivation. When you listen to a Dharma talk, this is also cultivation. People make offerings to the three jewels is also cultivation. Even something that seems insignificant, like children making a sand Buddha, is considered attaining Buddhahood, because by acting this way, the children have turned their minds toward Buddhahood. The mentality is there. There is a beginning. What about people who have not made offerings? This is no reason for concern. The Lotus Sutra said, if someone, though of scattered mind and no concentration, wanders into a stupa or a temple and says just once, I take refuge in the Buddha, such a one has already attained Buddhahood. So it does not matter why you came to the center. Is it with real dedication? Or perhaps you weren't very clear-headed and let friends or relatives talk you into coming, though you were not really willing and enthusiastic. Nonetheless, you came, and before lunch, perhaps you said a few words of taking refuge, or you performed some other act or acts moving in this direction. In doing these things, you have attained Buddhahood. This is to say that anybody who has the opportunity to listen to the Dharma and who knows that he has the potential to attain Buddhahood, or who has unshakable faith that he will attain Buddhahood, such a person has attained Buddhahood. The Parinirvana Sutra states that all sentient beings have Buddha nature, regardless of what they have done. You may have criticized or slandered the sutras. You may have committed any number of serious offenses, but you, as all sentient beings, can attain Buddhahood. Regardless of whether you have faith or not, regardless of whether you want to attain Buddhahood or not, you will all attain Buddhahood. These are not merely my words. This is a quote from the sutra. Question. From the quote, all you have to do is recite the Buddha's name once, and then you will attain Buddhahood. Is that right? Chengyan. When I said just reciting the Buddha's name or paying respects at temple will cause you to attain Buddhahood, it should be understood that attaining Buddhahood only means planting the seed for Buddhahood. Planting the seed is the cause. The full ripening into Buddhahood is the consequence. But we must say that the cause and the consequence are simultaneous. A fully ripened apple is the consequence, but a tiny green apple is also a consequence. Again, in the Parinirvana Sutra, it is said that there are three causes for Buddhahood. The first is the primary cause. All sentient beings can attain Buddhahood. The second is the final cause. Shakyamuni Buddha is an example of this by completing the full transformation to Buddhahood. The third are the conditional causes, which applies to every point in the path. Different points in the path, different situations, all lead sentient beings to move on and on to complete Buddhahood. This is also called the conditions as cause. So altogether, we have three kinds of causes for Buddhahood. To summarize, the Parinirvana Sutra has two phrases which say that consequence pervades throughout all the causes, and causes incorporate all consequences. In other words, from the perspective of the consequences, everything is cause, and everything is consequence. From the perspective of the causes, everything is consequence, and everything is cause. This is not all that easy to understand.